As you've been hearing on St. Louis Public Radio, science reporter Eli Chen is actively involved in producing and participating in Story Collider, a weekly podcast and series of live storytelling shows about science. We hosted a live Collider event here in May at Umselet Grand Center. There is another scheduled for October. A flashback now as we listen to Eli's presentation at the last event.
It was about a year and a half ago, and I was sitting on a balcony in a small beach town in Delaware, and I was looking up at the moon. And I was looking up at it because that night, people around the planet would be able to see a rare lunar eclipse. And lunar eclipses, they happen often enough, you know, when the Earth comes in between the sun and the moon. But not often do they happen at the same time as when the moon comes closest to the Earth. And when the moon is in this position, it looks larger to us, and that's why we call them supermoons. And total lunar eclipses are just amazing to watch anyway, because light from the sun bends around the edges of the Earth in a way that refracts red light onto the moon, and that's why we call them blood moons. The last time there was this supermoon-blood moon combination was in 1982, and I didn't exist then. The next one will take place in 2033, and by then I'll be in my 40s, which I can't imagine right now. I wasn't observing this eclipse alone. Sitting next to me was my boyfriend, whose balcony I was sitting on. And for the sake of this story, I'm going to call him Adam. Adam and I had been dating for about a year. And we had this sort of dynamic where I'd babble on about Mars and bacteria and all the beautiful things you can learn from bat carcasses. You know, just things that a public radio science reporter does stories about. I mean, I do what I do because I don't know how to quite turn off that switch of talking about weird things all the time. That's just who I am. And I remember he told me once that he knew he liked me from the day we met because, not just because he found me attractive, but also because I did a lot of talking. And there aren't many girls in southern Delaware who look or talk the way I do. I liked Adam because he chose his words carefully. And I tend to like guys who are a little reserved because, frankly, they're a lot less annoying. And, you know, for the most part, he let me be my weird self, which was important. But I was also strangely drawn to his nervousness around me. And usually I'm the one who's feeling awkward and nervous around other people. You know, I have crippling social anxiety. And it was new for me to be on the other side of that. So we're sitting on the balcony, or watching the moon turn red, and this is something that doesn't take place in 15 minutes. It took hours. I think we were sitting out there for at least a couple hours. And nonetheless, Adam stayed up with me. You know, he took charge of adjusting the controls on the telescope, which he was very good at doing. And rarely in my life has there been anyone who's been willing to spend that much time with me. You know, growing up, I always felt like I was a burden to other people. But as, you know, the moon turned red that night, and as we, you know, watched the eclipse through the telescope lens, I remember thinking, I'm not going to find anyone better than this. A little time passed, and I got offered a job in St. Louis to continue being a public radio science reporter. And Adam and I were dying to get out of Delaware. So we eagerly packed up all of our things, and we left the state, and we moved in together. About 8 months after we moved here, I interviewed a cognitive psychologist who studies romantic love in the brain. So she had invited me to watch some experiments where she was recording the brainwaves of people who had recently fallen in love. And I sat down with her a couple of times to ask her why she studies what she studies. And the way she saw it, love is a way to understand how the brain works. You know, love is a very powerful motivator. It can sometimes make us do really irrational things. And this researcher was really interested in learning how our thoughts influence how much we love other people. And she had published some research that said that thinking positive thoughts about, say, your partner, your spouse, would help you feel more in love with them. And thinking negative thoughts about, say, someone who had broken your heart would help you feel less in love with them. And to me, and I don't think I'm alone here, that seemed fairly obvious. But then she threw out this example. She said, say you're in a committed relationship and you find that you've fallen in love with someone else. You could attempt to try and control love by thinking positive thoughts about the person that you think you should be with and negative thoughts about the person you shouldn't be with. And immediately I thought, that would really suck to be in that situation. But I was also skeptical because relationships are complicated, people are complicated. And so I asked her if this would actually work in a real life situation. She said her research showed that it could work in the short term, and that over the long term, you'd have to keep exercising those thoughts regularly to work. I left her office thinking, who's got time for that? But I also thought it would never happen to me, because I thought things between me and Adam were good. And I had also become really close with his friends and family, and there was a lot of talk about getting married down the road. But there were also things that were kind of simmering underneath the surface. Things that, you know, I thought were issues that naturally came up when you're with someone for an extended period of time, and especially when that person moves halfway across the country to be with you. Basically, I'd been harboring a lot of guilt that I was here pursuing this glorious science public radio career while he was attending community college with kids half his age and waiting tables at a really dysfunctional restaurant. I'd come home from work a lot and immediately just start complaining about things that happened that day. And that happened over and over again to the point where he said that he had enough of it and that he didn't want to hear about it anymore and that I should be grateful to have the job that I have. And it was a valid point, but it made me feel terrible. And it also made me feel alone. So bad feelings like that were building up in the weeks and months, actually, before I interviewed this psychologist. And in a few short weeks after, I realized that I had fallen in love with one of my friends. And this was a friend who I felt like I could talk to and share things that were happening in my life without feeling bad about it. And I didn't have to prod him to be receptive to the things I was talking about. And there were times where we'd get into these long conversations about feeling a little lost in life. And when I spent time with him, the loneliness I was feeling would recede only a little, but just enough to matter. And when I realized what was happening, I thought about what the psychologist said, and I tried to redirect my thoughts. I thought, this is stupid. You know, Adam does so much for me. He moved here for me. He loves me unconditionally. I should be lucky to have him. And crushes will come and go, and my friend will always just be a friend. And I even forced myself to think about what our apartment would look like without all of Adam's books and posters and, you know, Lego spaceships. And I try to focus on how devastating that would feel. But I really underestimated how much stress I was under in my professional and personal life, and how much that was making it impossible to control the feelings I was having about these people. And eventually, Adam and I got into a huge fight, and that led quickly to the end of our relationship. I finally admitted that I didn't think I was in love with him anymore, and a large reason why I was with him was because I didn't think anyone else would have me. And that was a feeling I couldn't change. And he said it was the cruelest thing that anyone ever said to him. And in less than a week, he packed up all of his things and he left St. Louis. Since then, I've tried and still trying to figure out what love means to me. I never expected to have feelings for anyone else. And I never expected to hurt Adam the way I did. And I also never expected to feel so relieved, actually, when he up and vanished from my life. There was a while where I was wondering if I was just some horrible, messed up, awful, selfish person. But my friends who were so supportive during this time, they kept telling me that I shouldn't be ashamed of the way I feel, that everything I'm going through just means that I'm human. And I started to think that maybe I shouldn't try to control love. Maybe I should just accept my feelings as they are. Recently, I remembered this one time that Adam and I were walking along a beach in Delaware, and the moon looked unusually large that night near the horizon. And I tried to take a photo of it with my phone, but the moon ended up looking small, and I was disappointed that my phone couldn't convey the size of the moon I was seeing. Adam said something about how it's really our minds that make the moon look big to us, and that our perception is actually based on an illusion. At first, I was annoyed that, you know, my brain was responsible for tricking me in this small way. But then I saw it as a chance to learn something new about myself, and that there's something to appreciate about the curious ways that our minds and our bodies are wired to give us the experiences that we never expected to have.
That was St. Louis Public Radio science reporter Eli Chen, recorded as part of a live Story Collider event on May 2nd, 2017, in the Umselet Grand Center Community Room. There is another Story Collider event scheduled for Thursday evening, October 5th, in the Ready Room in the Grove. If you have a true story about science you would like to tell at that event, you could submit it to stories@collider.org. But be advised, today is the last day to make your submission. You can learn more about the Story Collider at storycollider.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.